Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the HRO Adventures podcast with Rusty and Preacher Dave. Good afternoon.
We're glad you're back.
Yeah. You guys ready to talk about some fishing?
Dave will do it if we make him.
Push my arm. You know, Jesus said, I make you fishers of men. So we'll...
Just follow instructions.
Just follow instructions. Absolutely. Absolutely. So.
And it's a great, this is a great place for fishing. I mean, one of the things I love about this area is there's so broad a spectrum of types of fish to catch. Yep. There's a lot of ways, with trolling, with in a boat on the shore, mountain streams, rivers, you got everything.
It's within not like, a short drive too, yes. Right? It's not not like you got to drive hours and hours to get to anything. So right.
Where I was in Kansas, we had fairly good fishing at this man-made pond, and we had pretty good fishing at this other man-made pond. Yep. And there was this river. If you liked really muddy tasting catfish, and so it was good. You also could catch alligator gar there.
Yep.
Really?
If you
those are a sight to see.
Oh, they are.
You get them up, you don't even know, like, where am I going to touch this thing? This thing is going to hurt you in 100 ways.
The first one I ever caught, I was in Oklahoma, and I was on my old cane pole.
I was five years old,
and, had something big, and I pulled it up. I'm walking up the shore with this thing and pulling in, and then I see it, and I just freak out, just drop everything. And it starts flipping and takes off across the water with my pole attached to it. Mm-hmm. Guy down the road, down the way from me, cast out between the fish and that, caught my pole, or caught the line and pulled it back in. And then he kept this gar.
Here you go, Rusty. I've got it up on the screen for you here.
Oh, you do?
Yes, they just are.
Nothing but teeth and spines and
they're
and fast.
And they are just ugly, and it's...
Wow. They are ugly, aren't they?
The fish that time forgot.
Yeah.
Or maybe time remembered. I don't know.
Yeah. It's sort of a red flag when you have to have all, metal leaders, and, like, that's an indicator of what you're, what you're fishing, that mono won't cut it because everything is sharp teeth and...
Wow.
Yeah.
But they are... They're fun to pull in sometimes when they're at a certain size. I've got relatives that love to go fishing for alligator gar.
Really? Wow.
Look at that thing. Just looks like it's something from the dinosaur.
It does.
Yeah.
That square nose and my goodness.
And there's a lot of teeth hiding in there.
Oh, yeah. They're not like, largemouth bass. Pick it up by the mouth and...
Yeah, and it just goes, okay, what do you want to do, right? Yeah.
You won't have a thumb.
Yeah.
So, but they're edible.
Yes, they tell me they are.
Certain people considered them to be edible.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never actually been that
hungry. Well, there you go.
Yeah, look at that.
Now you got some teeth up there. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I've never been that hungry.
Alligator gar.
So they're interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have those in the state of Washington?
I hope not.
I've not seen any.
I've never seen or heard of those at all. So.
It seems like they like the warmer waters. Mm-hmm. But
these are all things warmer down in the lily pads,
right?
Kind of a bass kind of environment.
Yeah. Boy,
I don't think they'd survive the cold here.
No, I hope not. I like the fish we've got here, so because the vast majority of them are edible, and I love the love to catch what we eat.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an older couple that are kind of having some health issues, and they commented about they loved walleye fishing. And had a guest on about expert stuff on walleye, and I love being able to go catch some, clean them up, take them to that day, and say here's
some fresh walleye,
share it with them. That's one of the great benefits of fishing, I think.
Yeah. Randy used to fish a lot, and now that he can't, he misses it. You can tell.
Well, he helped me a lot because he actually gave me some gear and told me about fish. Here's how you fish these. And at that point, I'd only been up here 4 or 5 months and hadn't really been anywhere fishing and was trying to learn everything I could learn. It's one of the things that I really think is important. Anything you can learn from somebody, pick it up. And not necessarily just from people that want to sell you lures or reels or anything like that, but if somebody will show you, this is what I do, this is how I do it, pay attention.
Right.
And that will help you become a better fisherman, help you get more successful, and just enjoy it better. So it's been good.
Yeah, there is a passed down element to it, right? The knot that I tie is a knot somebody's grandpa taught them and somebody else taught them, and it's literally been handed down as, this is what Dwayne tells me to tie or whatever, yeah, you know. So there's some neat, again, if you stop and pause for a minute, there's a lot of unique just passed down carryover things that involve in fishing and also hunting and, you know, whatever, so right. The outdoors. So.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, you guys went fishing since we did the last fishing podcast.
Yes, we did.
So what did you get?
We did.
We almost got grounded once. Oh. The shore, okay. Which was good. We learned not to do that again.
Yeah, don't do that again. The boat's still moving. We're on the river, yes.
The river adds a dynamic, doesn't it? A whole new dynamic. You have got to keep one eye on what's going on with the river.
Pretty soon Dave's looking at me and I'm going, what? He goes, the shore. It's right behind you. It is. You're not supposed to run the engine into that?
Yeah, it's just one of those weird things. Trolling motor and rock don't really go well.
No.
Not for long.
No, we've had a great time up there. Gone up on the river to see beautiful country. I had actually fished that end of Rufus Wood.
Was it Rufus? Okay.
Yeah, we were up there trying to troll along that, and we thought, well, let's go to the other side. And I thought, I'm looking at the depth finder on there. I thought, I don't have reels with enough line to get to the bottom of this. So,
some of your adventures have the geologic aspect to it. So fishing Puget Sound, and it's amazing how deep some of this stuff is. If you sit back and think of other states maybe that you fished at, it is amazing how deep some of these things that we put a boat in and fish. And, you're hundreds of feet down. I know growing up we watched Jacques Cousteau, right? That was kind of the famous thing to watch. And he had quite a few things on. It's mainly octopus underneath the Narrows Bridge because it's so deep and so dark.
Oh, really?
They did really well there. So I kind of knew about the Narrows Bridge long before we moved there and moved on to the other side of the Narrows Bridge. So I just wanted to tie in your geologic stuff too. Are ridiculously deep.
And come to think about that, we're behind Chief Joe, so we're on the deepest part of Rufus Woods.
Yeah,
you know, we're not at the base of Grand Coulee where it's the shallowest. We're at the other end.
And it was amazing. We'd be, 12, 15 feet from big rocks sticking up out of the thing, and looking down, and we've got 100 feet of clearance below us.
How is that possible?
How does this work?
Yeah.
And if this is all built on the receding, carving out as glaciers recede, this is kind of amazing how that can actually happen.
Yeah.
It's always been fascinated by that. So.
And it's just stunning area. You just to even get in get on the river and just float around and look. Half the time I'm getting hung up because I'm looking at the world around me.
That's right.
Yep. And it doesn't matter how many times you've launched at that boat ramp and fished that particular section. There's always something else to find. So, there's a beauty here that having fished a lot of other places doesn't necessarily do that.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I tell people I still feel like I live in a postcard.
Yeah. We really are lucky.
It's gorgeous. And we were able to get up on some pretty good fish.
We got a big trout that day.
We got a big 27 inches, something to that effect.
What was the trout hitting on about a week ago?
This black squid or brown squid.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
Okay.
It was a kind of a dark red tube bait.
Okay.
They would just drop in and just let it start kind of bouncing as it's going down. And, I love when they take it because it feels like you're stuck. It feels like you're bouncing. They feel like, I'm on the bottom. Mm-hmm. And then you realize your pole is now bent over sideways and the game is on.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Very nice. Great. So I'm just thinking back to Eric's podcast about depth. So how deep were you when you were catching fish? Were you shallow like Eric was predicting?
At that, on that one, we were dropping down probably about 10 feet.
Yeah, I was going to say he kind of had 12 as a, very cool.
Walleye, I've been hitting them right at around the 20-foot level.
Yeah. I told him that one we caught on the west shore, I think we were in 12 feet when we caught that.
Yeah.
Remember, because we were surprised, because we were like, oh, we're too shallow here. And then Eric goes, well, see, that's where they're at this time of the year. And I'm going, okay, well, we stumbled into that one.
I was just thinking that was pretty accurate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. That's back to the, if you'll listen to people.
They'll
give away the stuff. Which is really nice. Because a lot of fishermen are really tight-lipped on stuff. You know, they talk about their favorite fishing hole. In fact, a friend of mine was talking about his grandpa teaching him to fish. And as they were coming back to the shore, he said, all right, let's change the lures out.
Yep, I have done that.
So that people would, on the shore, they'd look in your boat and not
see what you were catching with. Yeah.
My first introduction was we moved here. We didn't have a boat yet, just as a little kid. So we did a charter at Westport. And you know, it was the one where they ring the bell and you bring all your lines up and they move, right? Mm-hmm. And there was an old guy in the corner, kept spraying something on the herring before it went down. And we looked and it looked like a WD-40 can, but it was painted brown, like you couldn't tell what it was. But I mean, I know the smell, even as a kid, and it's like, is he spraying his? He's very quietly when no one's looking, spraying his bait right before it goes over the side. And that was the first time I saw somebody using WD-40, but camouflaging whatever they were using so no one else could figure it out. And I mean, as a little kid, I remember thinking, number one, I know that smell. It's super distinctive. There's nothing else.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know anything about its, you know, how they developed it and all that till later. But why would he spray paint the can? So nobody, you know, and it was the beginning of, oh, these guys are hiding stuff, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, I have fished with people that will stop shy of the dock and change all their gear out too. Yeah.
But I've got
to throw people off. It's like, wait a minute. We're doing disinformation now? Yeah. Like, crazy.
But thankfully, I have, and back to that relationship thing, you know, build relationships with people. And I've had some really good people take me out and say, hey, here's what I do. Here's what you can do. And you kind of learn. And there's a few places you can go to get gear that it really does feel like the person's trying not sell you just whatever they've got, but they really know what they're talking about on that. You know, when actually we go to a place there, and they seem to know what they're talking about because it works.
Yeah.
Whereas I've gone to other big name places, and whatever it is they're on sale with,
that's what they're selling.
That's what they're going to hit on.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
But you've had some in the last couple of weeks. You've got some big fish.
We have. It's been fun.
Has it all been walleye?
The bigger ones have been the walleye.
Walleye.
The one trout that we caught.
Yeah.
And then just the walleye, I think have been running really well. And so it's just, I would love to say it's all just perfect skill, but gone out to the same place and caught nothing.
Caught nothing. So, yeah.
Skill and luck go together.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Well, now, you fish Quincy Lakes too?
Yeah.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. I like to fish over there at Evergreen.
Evergreen,
It's got quite a variety. Usually I go for the walleye there because they've got a pretty good, pretty good set of them there. Also, there's perch, smallmouth bass, good stuff. And then the crazy one that makes me come back there is that they've got the pictures of the tiger muskie.
Okay.
And it says, limit 1 and over 50 inches, and I thought, well, that's the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you
challenge
do.
Accepted.
So try to find this fish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. It's also a really nice. It's a small lake, so you don't have to have a big boat for a lot of power on it. Because, I've got I call it the QE3 because it's just a little shorter than the Queen Elizabeth was, by about 900 feet. About a 12-foot boat, just a trolling motor is all it takes. It'll get you wherever you want to go.
Okay.
And, runs to, I think the lake runs, 30, 40 feet in its depth, but it has really good variety. Got a lot of places with good weeds, a lot of places that are rock shores. So it's whatever, however you like to fish.
Okay.
It's a really good place.
Really good place. Very cool. I've never fished any of those lakes over there.
Oh, it's fun. It's fun. It's a good place.
Yeah.
It's a good for the one next to it, Burke, is a pretty good little trout place.
Yeah.
Go out there. They've got some, they put in a really nice handicap dock for people to be able to get. even a wheelchair all the way down to the water level to be able to fish from it, and that's a great benefit. Because this handicapped dock also means easy way to get children down there.
Yeah, right. Exactly right.
Introduce
right.
them to it instead of having to have them bust through all the weeds and rocks and then fall in and then you fish them out and all that.
So yeah,
but it's good.
Cool. Very cool.
And that's we saw cool. that WDFW's stocking some of the muskie, aren't they?
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook.
Yeah.
Did you find it? Okay.
I sent that to you because I'm going, did you know about this or had you heard about any of that or anything?
I hadn't seen that they were stocking new lakes.
Is that what it said? Was that these were new lakes?
Yeah, they added several lakes
okay.
That they put in. And there's still only one in Grant County where we are, mm-hmm. that has the tiger muskie, but they've added it to several other lakes, which would be good. Because from what I understand, in my super limited understanding of it, it's a fish that cleans up stuff we don't want in the lake. Mm-hmm. They go after suckers. They go after the pike minnow, and that's their basic thing. And that's good because they look like a very scary fish.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a predator control, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how big would that one be? Are those 50 inches?
I don't know. It depends on how close it is to the guy's chest.
You know, it could be. It's close.
It's got to be close.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is that thing. Now, I've been in places where they try to get rid of things like this, too. This thing will clean that lake up in, like, a season, right? I mean, they go nonstop. So you got to be careful. they will clean it out for you.
Wow.
I'm trying to see if anybody's got one with the teeth in there. But I mean, just look at the striping on that. And it just lays down in the bed there, and it'll camouflage itself.
You can see a little tooth there, but
mm-hmm.
I think they're a very pretty fish.
Oh, yeah?
It's interesting with their top fin being so far back. It's a little different to look at them. You're like, wow, that's strange.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one of the big markings of them. And then you got the rounded tail, so you can tell them from the pike.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little darker, a lot darker than the pike.
Yeah, and this guy's a little, not as long as the pike.
You know? Yeah.
But definitely in that family.
Huh, yeah. That's interesting.
And he's got a very far, look how big his FOC is, right? His forward of center for like our arrows.
Yeah.
He's all fletched out back here and all the weights up here, right?
Yeah.
So these guys are hitting and doing some damage with the kinetic they hit something, not just all teeth, right? But put the hurt on something by stunning it. And
now, what do tiger muskie, do they spawn?
No, that's an interesting thing. They are sterile because it's a hybrid of the pike and the muskie.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they didn't want to call it
pike muskie
or a mike.
So they probably went around for days trying to figure out a non-offensive name.
So we'll throw the tiger in there because they are striped a little bit like a tiger.
Yeah, they're striped pretty cool. Yeah.
So that's the thing. But they are, they have a lifespan of, from what I understand, 4 or 5 years is typical lifespan of them. And they just die off after that. They can't respond. I can't reproduce because it's artificially made.
Gotcha.
Interesting stuff. The stuff that God made can reproduce itself. The stuff that we figured out, not so much.
Not so much.
But they are super fun to catch.
And that's why they can be used to control some evasive stuff, right?
Gotcha.
Now, are these good eating?
I have been told so.
That I don't know, but people do,
I have been told that it's good eating, but I have not hit the 50-inch level on them, so cannot verify that on my own.
And then I think you were telling me something about 1,000 cast or 10,000 cast or
they
something.
They call it the 1,000 cast fish or the fish of 1,000 cast because you will cast a lot trying to get one. In fact, at the lake there in Quincy, I saw them in the water first.
Oh, you did?
Several times. I'd see them coming along and thought, oh, man, I want to catch that, not even knowing what it is. And so I was throwing everything I could get, and I actually saw them follow the lure and thought, go, 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 no, go, no. And so they're an incredibly disappointing fish.
You don't get to be 50 inches as a fish and fall for
this is true.
The old tricks, right?
Yeah.
The old Red Devil or whatever.
Well, yeah, that's one good tooth right there.
Mm-hmm. That sucker gets you.
And that's how you pick them up, huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's how you ask your buddy to do it.
There is nowhere to handle that thing, I don't think. Huh? But look, neat markings.
Very cool.
And even the gills, when you try to reach back, if there that's a little bit of a sharp a piece on them, too.
Right there. They're, this guy right predator. In here.
Huh. So they are well defended.
Mm-hmm. And nothing eats these guys.
I was going to say your offspring and stuff, if they can get them shallow in the water. Absolutely. Yeah, but I don't think they have any type of, at least when they plant them, they're usually putting somewhere where there's nothing else in there that's going to go after them.
Yeah,
gotcha.
But, neat.
I love the fact that they use this to take care of a fish, because you've got now nature taking care of itself. Mm-hmm. Instead of trying to create something artificial,
right?
Go in and chemically shock all the fish or electrically shock them and try and remove them.
Mm-hmm. Which has a bycatch in it.
And this is good. And this thing has made a great sport fish. It is.
People want to catch them because I was reading something that they're big fighters.
They are.
Well, look, he's built like a torpedo.
Well, they. I hadn't noticed the whole fletching thing until you said it, but yeah, you're right.
I've actually caught two, which is, if they're a 1,000 cast fish, you can do the math.
Wow. you need a new arm.
And the first one was really small. I think he was probably a freshly planted. He was about 20 inches.
Okay.
Fairly thin. Looked a little, in fact, it was that dark. We'd finished actually an elders leaders meeting here at the church. Teresa was off down in Oklahoma with grandkids. And so I had like an hour of light, took off to the lake, and then was going to go home. And right at dark, I was throwing a really big bucktail spinner and just mostly throwing it to see what it felt like, on the pole, and hit something. I thought I'd gotten a really big largemouth, but he was fighting hard, even though he was, only about 20 inches. And pulled him up and had a headlamp on it at that point. I looked down and thought, I don't even know what this is. This looks prehistoric. This looks like, this looks dangerous. So I pulled him up on the edge and it occurred to me to think tiger muskie, and then pulled up my phone and looked. And yes, this is what he is. And so you do want to make sure you keep some pliers with you, because you don't want near that mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Kind of like putting your finger near the mouth of a teenager. Not a good idea.
Exactly.
Other one was on a worm rig.
It was, okay.
It was down. We were trolling for walleye. Had a big Colorado spinner on a little worm rig right at the bottom. And, he hit, and it felt like a walleye hit, because they're also a predator kind of fish. But as he came up, it got harder and harder and harder. I mean, I told people it was like trying to pull the plug out of the bottom of the lake. Mm-hmm. And, he fought, and it seemed like when he got closer and realized he was being brought closer, he dove harder and was pulling that little boat around the lake for, having to
towing your boat around.
Wow.
It was fun. Got him up. I was with Jeff, and we were, a good fishing buddy of mine, and got him in the boat, and I thought, this is great. He was 38 inches. I thought, he's got to be legal. And biggest fish I've personally caught. And we didn't have a scale to weigh it, so I didn't have that. But the only scale I had is on my net. It's got the inches marked out. So we laid him out there, and he's 38. I said, okay, grab the tail. I'll pull the head. We'll see if we can get him to 50. No, we didn't.
We need 12 more inches.
We need 12 inches.
12 inches.
And I thought, 12 inches and, wow. It's still too short. I thought, I can't imagine, but I think the state record right now is like a 36 pounds for one of those.
Yeah, that's quite a bit of a fish.
They are a big old fish.
This is the Colorado spinner?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So if people want to try to come east side, if they're over where I'm at or whatever, and do this, what you said Rufus, what a couple other places they should check out?
Evergreen is the only one I know in Grant County, but on the Game and Fish Department's website, If you put up Tiger Muskie, it'll tell you all the lakes that they've stocked them in and all the counties that they're in.
The two that popped in my head was Newman Lake up in Spokane and then Curlew Lake up by Republic. North of Republic. Seems like there was another one or two, but I can't. They're like Lake Taps is over on the west side.
See if I can find it real fast.
Yeah, you go to WDFW and go to Tiger Muskie, and it just starts going down lake by lake by lake. So,
you know, where to catch them.
Yeah.
And so actually, I really like the
Go down here. Yeah, it tells you just where you may encounter Tiger Muskie. Next one down. There you go.
There we go. So a list of lakes for somebody Lake to Marine, try. We Curlew. Talked about the There's kind of gear to use.
Yeah. Spokane. Oh, Silver Lake has them in Spokane County, too. There we go. But the other four counties are all, or no, Ferry County is Curlew, we're Evergreen, and then Spokane County. So you've got three counties on this side, and you got, what, three counties on the other side?
Yeah, cool.
So do make sure that you have a good heavy line. If you're going to go for them, you know, you don't want to do it on 8-pound test.
Yeah.
So, you're not going to pull in a 50-pound or a 50-inch long fish on an 8-pound test?
So they're doing
better have a good net
20 to 30-pound mono.
You can't have me netting for them, trying to bang it and knock it off. But,
grab the beater stick and whack you back with it.
Yeah. Well, poor Dave, when he caught that trout, you know, he goes, oh, I'm hung up. And so I'd shut the motor off, the troller. And I turned around, and I look, and there's this big flash of bright coming up from the bottom. And I'm going,
oh, cool.
You got a fish? And he goes, yeah, I got a fish. And I grabbed the net, and I just went whack, stuck that thing in the water. I didn't even have – I just hit the fish. And I went, okay, well, if I'd quit trying to knock it off. So
we turned into a Marx Brothers movie.
We did. We were the Chinese fire drill at that moment.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I also had another line out that was, you know, just – hanging down there, and of course the fish had to wrap itself.
Yeah,
up in it.
Somehow it knows.
Yeah,
they know.
But no, those fish look really cool.
Yeah.
The tiger muskie, but did it say how many? They didn't say how many they put out. They just said which lakes they put them in.
I didn't see how many they put out.
Let's see what the record is while I got it up though. I got 37 pounds in Curlew. So.
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe we need to go to Curlew and go fishing.
I don't have anything until 6 this evening.
Clear my calendar.
That is not the way home for Dave. That's the opposite direction for Dave.
Oh, I might need to sleep in the cabin.
You and me could go. And my grandmother, during wheat harvest, when I was little, because mom and dad were running out and driving trucks and tractors and everything else, and so she would stop, pick me and my brothers up, and take my cousins because they were doing wheat harvest at the same time, and she would take us to Curlew. Grandpa would go up and put a camper up there for like 2 months.
Oh, nice.
For July and August. And Grandma would take us little boys, all boys. There was five of us. And she would take us all up there. And we would I remember hours sitting there with Potsky eggs and a worm and a marshmallow.
And a marshmallow.
And sitting on the dock and sitting on the shore. And she'd get bored of Curlew Lake. And so then we'd go to some mountain lake that she could drive her car to.
Huh.
She drove that Cadillac car everywhere.
Oh, man.
Every dirt road. But she would take us to Curlew Lake was one of the places she liked to go camp. Hmm. So we'd go up there. Conconelli was another one that she took us to a lot. And then she went to, there was a cabin. She knew some people that had cabins up at Twisp. And then we'd go there and she had all these, we'd go fish a different lake every day.
Oh.
Take all of us little boys and, you know, of course, fishing, you know, when fishing was when you're catching, little boys are happy. When you're not catching, the pole's sitting there on the ground and they're throwing rocks and we're up catching. We caught more garter snakes and
love it.
Yeah.
And Grandma would sit there and just let us go play. So and fall in the lake and everything else.
That's the fun part about introducing kids to fishing. You can either go fish or you can take kids fishing, but you can't do both.
You can't do both.
Pack the snacks, right?
Absolutely.
And that's the funnest thing. I love taking the grandkids out when we're down in Oklahoma because I can, you know, if we're catching fish, then they're enjoying that. If not, we'll just ride around in a boat if we've got it. Or we'll go find a place, walk around, have some fun. Just you're building memories. And that's the big thing. And that's,
wow. I took, I think there was 13, my daughter was born in April.
Okay.
So for her 15th birthday, you know, and there was a big class of girls, and so, and all the girls all hung out together and everything else. Maybe it was her 14th birthday. Anyway, she wasn't old enough to drive. None of them were. So between Jackie and I, we loaded up all these kids, these, and they were all girls. Mm-hmm. And I took them to Deep Lake there at the state park.
Okay.
At Sun Lake State Park. We went out to Deep Lake because we could fish from the shore. And I could, there was only one trail back to the deal, so I could kind of corral them and
yes.
keep all the girls on one side of the trail. And we get out there, and I only had one stringer. And it was this really, really long one that I had. And so all I did was bait hooks. And we just used power bait eggs. And those girls started catching fish at Deep Lake. And so I've got somewhere in my archives, I've got this stringer that's got like 50 fish on it, you know. And wow. the biggest one might be 13 inches, you know. And because they were all planted, you yeah. know, from the year. And but those girls, I mean, I couldn't hardly get them off the hooks and back on with an egg and throw them back out. They would throw them back out fast enough. And I would just kept feeling that. And we only fished for, I don't know, I don't even think we fished for an hour.
Wow.
And the girls thought, okay, this is great. And so then it was back to the camp and eat hot dogs and whatever girls do mm-hmm. yeah. for birthdays. And I started cleaning fish. And I went back to the cleaning station down there at the state park at the resort. And I sat there and cleaned fish. And so, but Jackie cut them all into little chunks and they put them on forks and they cooked them over the fire. And oh, they just thought that was the greatest thing.
That would be.
But yeah, that's back to that. You can either go fishing or you can take kids fishing, but you yeah. cannot take kids fishing and fish.
I stopped there at that cleaning station to clean a big walleye, and a dad and his brother and his dad were there with like a 13-year-old boy. And all three of these older men are giving this kid advice on how to clean this fish. And I kind of, you know, I'm sitting there watching, and we're talking a little bit, and finally realized that the kid caught all the fish.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And so that's why they're making him clean it. And when they walked away, I told the kid, I said, you realize they're just giving you grief because mm-hmm. you outfished them. Keep it up.
Yeah, don't stop. Yeah, that's fine.
And they will constantly get on you about how well you clean the fish. But you keep doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was cleaning the fish station. I tried to get him, you know, point, you know, spray mm-hmm. them. You know, they've been giving you grief on this thing. You know, you got that water handle. Get them. You can't teach kids everything on one trip.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, but it was sort of fun. So what other kind of fishing do we have you done any bass fishing yet this year?
We have. Went up with a friend up to Banks,
uh-huh.
and we're catching a lot of smallmouth on the
– Very cool.
Their little tube baits. When they're hitting, it is so much fun. You know,
now, are they done spawning?
I think they are.
They are.
I think that's what Eric was saying, yeah.
Something.
I think
we were at that point. I know the walleyes are, but I mm-hmm. didn't remember.
Yeah, I don't know when they do. I should pay attention to that one.
Too busy catching them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just like catching them. And they hit at a good time. You know, anywhere around the rock areas mm-hmm. up there at the lake. So they'll hang out kind of to protect them from everybody else and to catch whatever little stuff's coming in to hide. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But those, and with the with the tube baits, the spinners, both, you're going to get hooked. You're going to get hooked on the bottom at some point, catch on a rock. If you're not losing gear, you're not fishing.
Yeah, they like to be down in the weeds and everywhere where you get snagged, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But we were getting, you know, 2 and 3 pound smallmouth.
Hmm.
That was fun. So I like those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Well, but yeah, we're going to have to. I haven't thought about Curlew Lake. Would be kind of a fun little drive to take you up to. You haven't been up that north, that far north, so I'll take you up there.
Republic, yeah, you'd like that.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Well, so Dave, now that we've talked to, you know, Preacher Dave about fishing, now you got to do some product, some reviews.
I've done some product reviews, yeah. So let's see, hand me one of those arrows and hand me that little packet down there. Well, guys, step over to the Boat Lab with me right now. We'll check it out. Well, there's a new player in the lighted knock game, and it's Raised Knocks, made by Raised Hunting. Probably seen the popular television program. These folks have designed a new style of illuminated knocks that uses a switch and a plunger rather than some of the other ways their companies have been doing it. These come in a 5-pack rather than a 3-pack like most other companies. And the retail price is around $34.95. I got them on sale during the Memorial Day period, so they were around $20. These were tested in Easton 5mm FMJ arrows. The ones we tested have the internal diameter of the .204 for the Easton arrows. And on both the website and in the enclosure that comes with it, you're cautioned using Easton products that you have to really double-check the internal measurements, and it's going to be a pretty tight fit. Some sort of issue with Easton's arrows, the Raised Knocks folks claim that the diameter control is not there and that it's difficult for this product to fit. While I did not have any issue fitting them, I certainly do see what they mean. It is a very tight fit compared to other brands I've used. The unit consists of the knock, plastic section, and an internal battery with the light in it. Very similar to all the other brands that I've used. Looks very similar. Only difference with this is the first one I've used, whereas you test the plunger using your D-loop prior to installing it to basically fine-tune the battery so that it comes on at just the right pressure. Not a major deal, pretty easy to do, but it's the first brand I've used where I have to sort of tune it before I can install it. The fit is tight enough that I use the recommended procedure from the company of using bow wax dipped on the end of your knock in order to help the battery compartment and the knock itself slide into the shaft of the arrow. It was a very tight fit and took a little bit of pressure. And one of the key issues here, which I think is why they've got so many warnings about doing this on Easton arrows, is while not an obvious hourglass shape, there is a small, thin pinch point between where the battery and the actual plastic of the knock are. And that thin point, under pressure, is where this thing will bend. And when it bends, it will break it. I broke one during a second install. Installed all five perfectly fine the first try and was able to shoot them. Had one fail after two shots and it wouldn't light again, so I took it apart to readjust it, cleaned it up, readjusted it, and during the reinsert of this on the second time is when I bent it and broke it. So one that didn't work after a couple shots, and then I bent it right at the pinch point. And if you take a look at our YouTube video, you'll see where it's just a really thin piece between the battery and the actual plastic of the knock. If that could be reinforced or something, it would save a lot of these being broken. If you use the other brands, you'll notice that they are a solid piece, just push right in. So I like this brand. I like the plunger idea. I like the on-off switch. Don't necessarily care for the knock being lit while you have it in the D loop, you know, as you're at full draw, but you could mitigate that if you wanted to. And just overall, for the sale price, it would be fine to give it a try. But there's a little bit heavier duty product out there. The downsides on the heavy duty product, like the Luminox, are that you do have to pull and twist ever so slightly to get the light to come off when you're done with your arrow. That could affect fine tuning of knock tuning if you're like a competitive shooter. And what I noticed is bouncing around in the truck or putting them in a bucket, it was just enough of a bounce to turn a light back on. So sometimes you'd find out your light's been on all day. Again, something you can mitigate, but overall, I like a solid plastic knock shaft that's going to go right into your arrow shaft rather than just the one flimsy piece that can make or break the whole thing. So overall, maybe 5 or 6 out of 10 as far as for the expense and getting an extra one, looks like it's okay. Could use a little bit of go back to the drawing board for a couple more protective pieces around that just so you don't bend them in half. But they make a pretty good point in making sure you scan the package and follow the instructions, and they warn you up and down that this is going to happen. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's their fault, but I think it could be a little slight redesign, and it could be better. Well, welcome to another HRO Adventures product review. Today we're going to review the 2D Mule Deer Target from Dead Nuts Outdoors. Dead Nuts targets are proudly made in the USA and printed on fluted polypropylene with high-definition, lifelike pictures in a matte finish. Dead Nuts targets are designed to be lifelike. We selected the 2D Broadside Mule Deer with Vital X series. Ordinarily, these 2D targets are sold for $149. If you go for the Vital X series, it's $179. We'd like to show you why the extra $30 is well worth it as we dive into what the Vital X series can do for you. You can find these at deadnutsoutdoors.com. That's deadnutsoutdoors.com. The Vital X series uses Quiver technology. That's Q-U-I-V, capital A-R, Quiver technology. Quiver is a target and archery analysis app that you download onto your phone. It puts a virtual 3D anatomy inside 3D targets. The technology uses an NFC chip that interacts with the target that you are using, much the same way as Apple Pay and tapping go together. Once you tap your phone to the chip, usually located towards the rear of the target, it will use artificial intelligence to place the correct internal organs and skeletal structure inside your targeted species. It shows the skeleton, hearts, lungs, and liver. This will help hunters become more ethical shooters. What do you get in the kit? You get the polypropylene target with the high-definition, lifelike game image. You get hanging tabs to help you hang your target on your surface. Key reminder here, you must have a suitable backstop for your target to lean against or to hang next to. The polypropylene will not stop your arrow. So I use the Big Shot block target. Works perfect. Any block style target, probably hay bales, anything that you're using already, should work. Dead Nuts also includes two extra sections of the vitals. They just pop out after you've shot them all up, and you pop in a new ones. They go in with just sticky tape. If you go with the Vital X option, you get the quiver enabled chip, which will analyze your shot placement. Instead of aiming at rings, this lets you find the right angle and location for shot placement, whether you're a tree stand, ground blind, or any other option. How do you use it? It's pretty simple. You set up your target, then you place it next to a backstop, take your shot, walk up to the target, tap the NFC chip, and look at your phone for the where the vitals are placed, and then take notes of your shot. Our final findings are this. This will definitely make you a better shot right out of the gate. With the very first shot, I was able to improve what I've been doing. You get instant feedback. Again, aim small, miss small. This would be a great addition to anybody that's shooting block-style targets. Like we said, time to get away from the rings as you get closer to season and start getting very specific about target placement. Using this, the two styles of targets, both block targets and a Dead Nuts 2D target, will really improve your shot placement and your anatomy knowledge. The cost and the portability, $179 versus almost $600, and the Dead Nuts version is extremely portable. You could use it at home and then take it to camp to continue to fine-tune. Outfitters, take note. I think you'll find this is a great tool to set up as clients arrive in camp. And instead of wondering if your client has his shot placement idea correct. You can take a couple of shots, and you can both get on the same page so that while you're out in the field, both of you are talking about the exact same spots you want the client to place the arrow. I think it could be a very inexpensive training aid for the outfitter. The price, the portability, and the high quality of the product, as well as just the immediate feedback that it gets, all in a budget well under $200. You can't beat the 2D targets by Dead Nuts. Go to deadnutsoutdoors.com and check out all the different species they have. I think you'll find this is a welcome addition to your training and will make you a better shot.
But the thing I like about lighted knocks, mm-hmm. and so this would fit in that category too, is me as the guide, mm-hmm. I can follow the arrow mm-hmm. a lot better. Mm-hmm. I can see the arrow.
You can see what your guys.
When you're shooting the arrow, you can see it. Mm-hmm. But for standing off to the side, it's hard for me to pick that arrow up. And, you know, a lot of times I don't see it until it actually makes contact.
Yeah.
And then I can see it make contact. With the lighted nocks, I can actually, it's tracer. I mm-hmm. I can see that thing going down through there. We hung one in a deer one time. The guy was shooting extreme angle, and it hit high, but it didn't spine it, but it hit the spine bone.
Ooh.
So you could see where, you know, the buck, you could tell it hurt mm-hmm. and it spun, but all it covered was the broadhead. Mm-hmm. I mean, it only went in an inch mm-hmm. or two, and then it stopped. And then you saw the arrow. You know, you saw him. At first, I thought it was going to be spined, and then the arrow just went limp, and you would see it as he catches himself back up and took off. Mm. And so I could tell it was just hanging under the skin. So no mortal wound at all, yeah. but he's carrying the arrow. And so my hope was, you know, this was at night. Mm-hmm. They had just come out. So my hope was that wherever he goes, I'm going to see this mm-hmm. bright green light. mm-hmm. And so I, you know, I didn't want to push the deer. I wanted to see where it went because, you know, it's pretty healthy. It's going to be able to run and everything. Yeah. And so we didn't push it. And I couldn't find it. I couldn't find it in the, but as it got darker and darker and darker and darker, well, still couldn't find it. So I went back to where we shot from, and the arrow came out about 200 yards from where we had shot. The arrow came out, and it was like how we didn't see this in the daylight because it is bright. Mm-hmm. When it's dark outside, those things are bright. So we walked right over to the arrow, got the arrow, came back, and we could tell from everything else that it only went in. It was the right arrow. So the next day we shoot one with the same mm-hmm. same nocks and arrows, and the arrow goes all the way into the fletching. Mm. Okay, so it actually went all the way through the deer, but it's sticking out both sides, mm-hmm. and I'm watching the deer run away. And so I know we've got a double lung, or what I'm thinking was a double mm-hmm. lung, and I'm seeing it run away, and I got blood coming out. So this is a good kill. We're letting this guy die. Well, it got dark, and I couldn't find it. And so I'm out there with the flashlight, and I'm wandering around. We had really good blood. We could follow the blood, so we knew where he went. And then the blood just quit. Because he ran out, mm-hmm. and so but he kept running, I looked all over and looked all over, and of course all of us defaulted to looking for this mm-hmm. Luminok because we know the arrow is still in it. Couldn't find it. Well, he fell on the knock side.
Oh,
so first thing in the morning, you know, we go right back out. Well, it's daylight now, and I'm not looking with a flashlight. You know, and it's there. He's laying, you know, 20 yards from where all of us walked the night before and couldn't see him. But he's laying on the knock, and so if he'd have fallen the other way, we'd have been 50-50 fine.
50-50
chance. Anyway, but I love Aluminox because I can see them, and it's good for arrow recovery.
Yeah.
I just love them for that. And if this is a good one. This one's I'm anxious to see.
Yeah, so let's see. So they're $34.99, but they're on sale for about $20 going through the Memorial Day thing on Amazon.
And
so
that's six?
This has five.
Five.
Most sell three, so that was one of their selling points was they do more.
Okay.
It's easy to set up if you're somewhat mechanically inclined, but you see the little sticker that they made to go to this instruction. That's a red flag of how you're going to break these if you're not careful. And what it is, it's an insert, and it's hard plastic, but it's light plastic in the middle. So if you think about loading this into the back, you're pushing a lot of force,
right,
and it's going to snap in the middle. And so I did break one doing it. It was I followed the instructions. They all worked fine. And then I had one fail on the second shot. And so I took it apart to work on it when I put it clean the contacts. And when I put it back, I bent it just pushing too hard. Super easy to push too hard versus Luminoc is a completely solid. You can bang it on the table and put it in. So the Luminoc brand is more stout than this. This, again, they had to make a sticker because they probably got so many complaints and stuck it on, like homemade style to remind you, please go here and look at our tutorial. Gotcha. But anyway, for the price and for what it is, these things are probably going to last you a season maybe, depending on how much you're shooting and stuff.
Gotcha.
So they're fine. They're not the I still think the Aluminox are a better investment if that's what you care about. I still have one that 7 years later the light still works. They were built heavy duty. These are very delicate until you get them in, then they're fine, so you just have to be patient with those. So would I recommend them? Sure. The price is right. They need to work on their designs though, because right in the middle almost looks like a Venturi is what I think of. Right when you're pushing, if they could just make that the same as everything else, that problem would go away. That sticker wouldn't be necessary. So, so it has some work that could be done, and it's probably good for a season. And then I just had one, and I just attribute it to an odd deal. It worked on the first shot, second shot, couldn't get it to light. And I just took it apart and redid the contacts, and it worked. But
cool.
But you got to get on their website. You got to do step by step instructions, and you got to take your time, or you'll break them putting them in. Versus the Burt Coyote Luminoc brand, super solid. My kids could shove them in there and all that. And what was interesting, this is the Easton 5mm FMJ arrow.
Okay.
I know Easton is quality. You can buy match grade. Everything is dialed in with, those little calipers and, micrometers and everything. They claim that Easton is so non-standard and they don't have the right kind of quality control. They make you double, triple check, sign a waiver if you're putting this in an Easton, because these don't fit always in Eastons. Mm. I didn't have any issues with the five arrows. But Gold Tip, all the other brands, no problems. But they warn you, if you're buying these for Easton, you're on your own, because they don't control the inner diameter very well. And I don't know that that's true. Huh. But they repeated it so many times during the purchase process that it was this might not work at all.
You got the message.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm happy with them. It's a different style than the inertial one, and it's interesting to play with. And
cool.
I do like having the control of the light.
That is kind of cool. I saw that too.
If you're paper tuning and stuff and knock tuning on the inertial ones, once you're done with it, you have to pull it and turn it slightly to get the light go out, which means you just undid whatever you did. Set up. I'm not good enough to worry about that. But
I do wonder. So. How that's gonna? Oh, the button you lined it up with a fletch.
I did.
That's how you cover it.
So I'm shooting.
You don't want it shut off when it goes through.
So I'm shooting it through the whisker biscuit setup, so it doesn't matter where you don't have to put it on the side right now. If you have a fall away or something, you'll have to set it with whatever, but it's just indexed with the.
But I was wondering, even going through the animal, the switch does. Flipping it back turns it off, and flipping it forward.
Yeah, so as you clip it through the D-ring, the string is going to push it down. And you can try it with your thumbnail there. It's not going to, I don't think anything's gonna. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
Okay, it's better.
And it's bright. They come in all the different colors. I'm just a red guy.
A red guy.
But anyway, happy with it for $20. Yeah. It was worth it. When the other brands are the exact same price, I'd probably go get those just because they seem beefier. Between installation and banging around in your right. bag, getting it somewhere, right? I don't know how much of a beating these would take, and I'd be curious if you get these wet, if they'll do it, if they'll have any issues. The other ones never did. But.
So now the target you were shooting at.
So the Dead Nuts target.
Skip went over and got a. I told him, I said, I want to buy that one with the chip and everything on it, and so he did.
Yeah, and I got it there so you can play with it after. But so this is the Mule Deer 2D Broadside. With Vital X series. So there's the plain. If you think of the kids' graduation yard signs and real estate signs, it's that filled foam.
Right.
Good for the elements with a realistic picture printed on it. So I like the realistic printer picture because there's shadows, there's changes in fur. Like I went out to 30 yards. At my little range. And I mean, it was like, wait a minute, did I lose the leg? And it's like, this is exactly what happens when you're out there. I needed to move to see my little line versus the 3D targets are just, I would say in my price point, just fake enough. I don't get that kind of training out of it. Mm-hmm. It's good for zeroing in and stuff, right? And then the ones like we saw, or actually it was Dwayne and I saw a life-size elk with those electronics in it. Okay. And then you can stand back here, that's telling you like shot velocity and everything, you know. Small loan to get that thing, and then you need a trailer to get it home. So in the price point, this is portable, which I like portable because everything I do, I move all the time. Could easily run this out to the cabins and re-sight in after traveling or something like that.
Gotcha.
Or at the price point. So this is listed at $179. This is with the special vitals. I think it's $120 without. At this price point and the realism you get from the training, you could get a couple different animals and almost set something up in a backyard if it's appropriate to shoot. I think a guy could go further and get better training on a budget if the budget's the deal. Like I said, I was able to pinpoint where I thought a heart was on a deer is about a half inch lower. I know anatomy pretty well and stuff, and I was a little surprised, and the computer backed me up that, I was just nicking, like, the bottom lining, right? I'm like, huh, I swear I know where this is. I mean, I kind of know my stuff. So it was instant training, instant feedback, right? Corrected it on the next shot. You have to wiggle your phone a little bit, but, I mean, for what it is and being out in the backyard or in the elements, I think it works pretty good, right? I don't have to be tied to the internet to make it work or anything. I guess you probably would, but it was through the cell. But for price and portability and then the quality of it, I mean, again, it's that cellular foam, I think is what it's called. But, I mean, you can set it up. It'll last all year out there, you know, as long as the wind doesn't break it or something.
But it's easy to put up and down, too.
Super simple.
And easy to pack.
I mean, I've shot at it, I don't know, 50 shots, and then it's back in the box there.
And so you can change the vitals out.
Yeah, so it comes with so the interesting thing with it is you got to have a backstop. It's not a target that has its own backstop.
It's shooting through.
I used a block-style target and just leaned it up next to it, and it worked just fine. So you could do hay bales. You could do whatever you got handy, I think. But, the little square for the vitals, they send you an extra already. I mean, you can go on the website and order them, which is kind of cool. And they're not price prohibitive at all, but it might take a couple hundred shots if you're hitting the same spot before you finally, you know, you're going to wear that spot out.
Oh, really? It'll
take
a lot.
Plastic paper.
Gotcha.
But the rate that I was going, I mean, I think by the time it's just nothing left, you could probably do a couple hundred shots.
That's really cool.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good. That's super. Super valuable.
Now this is Dead Nuts out of Monsanto.
This is the Dead Nuts. Colin hooked us up with it, and let's see here. Yeah, I think it'll last a little while, but like I said, at the price point and the education that you get from it is instant feedback. Which again, with the Knox or with shooting steel or anything, there's just that instant feedback. Your training goes up so high because you don't have to do this hundreds of times to get the feedback right. So.
Right.
It's okay.
And then I got a hold of Colin. We talked to Colin about Skip got to talking to him when he bought the thing and said that we're putting together a podcast. And, you know, we got hunting guys coming in and we're looking for good targets to have them practice on. And so Colin goes, well, I'd like to be on the podcast. So I actually have talked to Colin. He'll be on a podcast here with us here soon. And but I told him we were going to do a product review. So be ready. We're going to do the product review before we get you on. So so he was all excited. He goes, oh, I'm going to listen. So, but.
Well, again, for practice and reps, a different kind of target would make sense. The block target with the circles and try to walk them around, you know. So same with my pistol stuff for Steel Challenge and whatnot. Shooting isosceles, you know, sterile range, nothing's changing is not what I'm looking for. Now, maybe that's what some people are looking for. I need, you know, different positions. Am I sitting in the blind? Am I standing? Would, you know, if you're a tree stand guy, angles, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So practice is reps coming from the same place, but in as far as training to get better as a, say, for deer hunting or something.
Gotcha.
Or pronghorn, they have one of those, or they even have a turkey. I feel like this would accelerate your training. I give it a 10 out of 10 for what it is, right? It's not trying to be a 3D target.
Right.
But the visuals with their quality of photographs, it's giving you the same problems the animal gives me, and I need to move to fix it, right, or have the animal move. Like I got the shadow on the leg, the different colors in the fur, you know, just the things that are – you know, I'm going up the front leg and, you know, where's my, and the nice thing is, and unlike the 3D, you know, I can cheat, right? You know, remember we used to say for like instrument training, you know, one peak is worth 1,000 scans, right? But I still see the outline, which I know where the vitals are, and I still see where all the arrows have been going in and it's getting worn out. And when this one punches a hole, if you just push it from the back, the photo, it's not self-sealing, but you can't really cheat. It's kind of hard. You, at least, you know, like the distance of this is maybe 15 and a half or 18 yards. You're like, okay, I can't see any of the differentiators of where the target is. So I can't really, my eye won't let me go to the same hole again. I have to figure out where to shoot. And just about 20 shots in the backyard, I would say my skill level of pinpointing where I need to hit the deer, years worth of training in maybe an hour because of... It forces you to have to figure it out. So if you put a pronghorn, and you will learn all those spots. Learn and they've got them facing forward, facing back, all the unique shots that that might be your only shot. So you got to do it. It's not perfect broadside, right? So I think if a guy had the 3D, and I think there's a place for this one. If you on a budget and needed to have more options, like maybe you do elk and deer, I think this would be the way to go.
Way to go, yeah.
And you just need to have a decent block target to catch the arrow. So, really neat. But I'm not an expert, but I'm familiar,
right?
And I think I'm a decent shot. And from the first shot, it was whoa. Hang on a second. Number one, I'm in the wrong spot. How can I be like? I went right up, and I know right where the ribs are. Nope. I was wrong. They're a little bit higher than I was giving them credit for.
Was it hard to set up on your phone?
No, everything worked great. So you unfold it, put the Velcro backer on it. So it took a minute and 10 seconds to set it up out of the box. And then you scan the little, over by the behind rump area is a little little chip. You scan it, and now it prints the vitals. So now I can overlay it where my arrow is. And literally, if you look at the heart, it just hit the membrane, like right below. But every arrow was going in, and it was not an accuracy issue. It was, okay, I thought it said a little, instantly was better. So it has a great place, you know, with a 3D place that range offer those. I don't think I would do it that way. But if you're doing something at home, like I have, you know, 30 yards and a variety of shots, I think it's perfect. Plus it folds up in that box, so.
The web page.
Let's see. Well, it's
because I assume you looked all these up.
Yeah, it's Dead Nuts Outdoors. Let me just pull it up here real quick so we can make sure.
So Dead Nut Targets, right there. There you go.
And then what I'll do is you can see they've got quite a few different angles, and you know if you're looking at budget wise. You know, I would say it's worth the extra splurge to get the vitals, the vitals that come up on the computer.
Oh, gotcha.
Because like I said, if I didn't have that and I was shooting, I was convinced I know right where to shoot, done this before, I don't need any tutoring, and I was off.
Wow. Yeah.
And I can admit that. And again, I'm not an expert game hunter, but I would have walked out of there going, yep, everything's great right where it was. And you might find you are a little bit off.
So they got elk and antelope.
Pronghorn and elk.
Mule deer.
Yeah, and then you got front and back, so you can get a few different.
Well, there is a whitetail over there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Front and back, side.
And then they got some combos. So, I mean, on a budget, a guy could get some significant training out of it for, we're talking under $500 for targets that'll last for a while. And then they back up all the vitals, and you can buy parts to fix them. So let's see. There's a bear.
And
they got a bear. They even got turkey.
Turkeys, yeah. Bears, horns. Turkeys there.
So for $20, you can get a set of two, and they have little stickies. They're not Velcro. I didn't even peel the stickies off. They fit perfect. And like I said, as soon as you back up, you can't see the outline to tell, where was my vital plug, which I immediately tried to cheat, right, and just couldn't. So it takes the cheating out probably until you have a few pretty good dings in it.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be convenient if we could get deer to wear those.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I felt like it was a year's Mountain worth goat. Of experience in probably the first 10 minutes I used it and reshifted everything I was doing. I guess I didn't know as much as I thought I knew.
No, that's good to know.
So that's kind of cool. And, 3D stuff is expensive.
It is. It
and
is.
Then where do I put this thing? Am I going to have this elk standing in my backyard? I don't know if the HOA all of that. Yeah. So...
Your wife would like to put it in.
I might have to consult my interior decorator, my exterior decorator. But neat product, neat idea. The realism of the photography really does do something for you.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, just hold your phone about, with the arrows in it, maybe 2 feet away, and you can see what rib you went through. It's... Like I said, years worth of data in one or two shots, and now I made the changes. Now I look at the animal a little different, and somewhere over the years I just thought it was a little lower. Dropped my eyes. So anyway, super cool.
That's what we talk about in the skin and shed when we got him hanging up. Everybody's going, this was the angle we were at. I didn't realize he was turned that far. Yeah. Those are the stories in the skin and shed.
But I do think if I didn't use the Vital X series, I would have been very happy with my shots and wouldn't have learned anything other than my bow's dialed in.
Right.
And if I was out there, I would have shot something a little low. So,
As I'm looking at the pictures on the website and everything, the podcast, nobody's seeing all this. You can go look it up. But I'm trying to figure out, is it a good thing or a bad thing that they're showing, Boone and Crockett Trophy elk and deer here?
This is what you can expect.
This might not be what we're hunting out there. But the thing...
stuff you do with your buck fever.
There you go. Maybe. Well, and see, that was where I'm thinking the good thing is the... It's so cool how the vitals show up on the pictures.
And I'll show you when we're done here, but I think you'd be surprised at how neat this really is.
Yeah, and it's going to be very, very cool because that's the biggest thing that I have with new archery hunters that I've guided was we get that buck fever. Mm-hmm. We're looking at horns, I look at horns, you look at where shot placement, aim small.
Well, think of where I was hitting and now have them jump the string or something. So
yeah,
now you're two, you could be 2 inches too low.
I'm always impressed with these guys on TV that actually, as that white tail is dipping, the arrow goes right in the spot where it's supposed to go. Was he lucky? Or was he actually, I know exactly how much lower to shoot.
But you could literally, you could have guys come into town, open this thing up, use a thing, and remind everybody where we're aiming at.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You could do a real quick brush up while we're having dinner tonight. Think about this. That could be the kind of thing you could use it for, too.
Yeah.
Because these guys have been shooting at a block target, probably getting ready. And
it was probably
maybe just like me where they're, thought that was slightly low.
5-6 years ago, a guy pulled out his phone and started videotaping his buddy while, in the middle of the day when we're not hunting and they're shooting targets there in the yard. And the guy started videotaping and I thought, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool, video, and then they'd watch. Well, then they start changing things, which makes an outfitter very, very nervous when things start changing. Don't do
anything dumb, dangerous, or different, right?
We just got here. You know, don't change it. And, but they're, how much difference that made. Because a person saw what they are. Because, you know, most of the time you're out there by yourself shooting. Nobody's videotaping you. Nobody's
years of information in two shots, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. What a cool deal.
So, anyway, nothing but good things to say about it. So, I think it has a purpose in either some education refresher when a guy shows
right,
up.
Right,
or, like myself, I don't want to say seasoned, but, I mean, I know my animals, and I'm like, huh, I guess I was I was off.
Well, very cool. So, very cool. Well, the Vital X, that's just...
I think it's worth the splurge to get it because it'll pay dividends the first time you will probably realize you thought they were in a little different spot, too.
Right? Exactly. Well,
and you can click through this and remove the skeleton and then remove the liver and then remove the lungs. I mean, you can really dial in.
Wow.
So I'm actually pretty good at knowing where the heart is. It's just I'm slightly low, right? I'm not shooting in the back or anything.
Right.
So anyway, but
that's pretty cool. Yeah. That's pretty well. Thanks for doing the product review. Yeah, I appreciate that, and we'll be looking forward to seeing those on the YouTube channel.
Awesome.
So
I think it's time to get into your calendar, huh?
Well, and the calendar is getting full. we've got here's the order they're coming in. I've got the Tour of Duty golf tournament in with the Tour of Duty guys coming up on Saturday.
Okay.
On the 31st, and that's going to be very, very cool. I've been so excited to be able to help these guys out and be a sponsor there, and it's going to be so much fun to sit at, you know, this is the way I need to golf, at a table, under a pop-up, with a chair and my cooler, and let the golfers come by me. You know,
that's a good way to do it. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm excited to be there and see that and get with those guys. And then next week, we have another set of chicks coming in. This time we're getting the chuckers and another set of pheasants.
So you're bringing in some chuckers to raise also?
Yep, going to bring some
can
chuckers in.
Can you mix all that stuff? Can they?
No. The chuckers that's have to cool. be all on their own.
Okay.
And I found a fella that he's new to the area, and him and I have become friends over the last couple months since he's been here, and he's just... loving the area, loving the fishing, loving the hunting, and he is just loving everything about it right now. And so I offered him, I said, you know, hey, I got some of these old Sarah Gators. You have some property, because I really don't have a place to raise the chuckers separate from the pheasants.
That's what I was trying to, that was what was running through my mind, is where is all this happening?
So I asked him if, you know, I says, you know, we kind of, worked out the details, and I told him, I says, you're taking all the risk. I says, I can help set you up with some equipment to get you started, but you're buying the food, you're buying the chuckers, you're taking care of them. And I says, and I will pay you this much for an adult, you know, what I would normally pay somebody else to raise the chuckers anyway. But this way they're raised closer to home, easier for me to get to, easier for – and it helps him out. And I told him, I says, you know, He started in, well, I'm going to build this, I'm going to build that. And I'm going, well, I think the first year, you got to just try
just
the
make sure.
Take what I got, let's see how it works, and let you get into it 1 year, see how the timing goes.
Yeah.
And then if you like it, hey, then let's build something permanent. Let's make make it work for you. But if you're not, but anyway, so we're going to try it. We're going to try to see what we can get done. So those come in next week. So we're going to be... we're going to be really busy here in the next 5 days getting everything put together for them before the chicks get here. I've just cleaned all the pens, seeded all the pens. I've got stuff growing in them, and now I'm just, you know, things got to grow because I'm going to be turning the first chicks that came in there at the end of April. Those guys are getting big.
My bad.
And they're starting to outgrow where they're at, and they're getting big enough where we can get them out and we'll put them in the barn. They'll be in the barn for a couple weeks, and then we'll open the door and let them out into the fly pens. So all that's got to happen too. So I'm getting specs in and everything else for that. So, but getting the pins ready was a big deal.
Yeah, I bet.
I've built a new brooder area, so these ones next week will be going into there. So okay. I've got really busy getting all that done. Ran into some deer the other day, just not even thinking about deer at the moment, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking.
You okay?
About it. Yeah. I wonder what was wrong that day. But anyway, I just wasn't expecting them and saw a pretty nice buck. So, and they should be, you know, around that 1st of June, we should be able to tell what they are. If they're going to be a big shooter, be a nice shooter or whatever. And this guy was already, you know, plenty legal. And so he's probably going to make the shooter category. Ooh. He was pretty nice. And, you know, typical buck in the spring. Could care less, you know, just out there living life, enjoying everything. Everything's green. Everything he's ever wanted to eat is right in front of him. Mm-hmm. So he has no...
Life is good.
Life is good.
It's like the
end of
a thing.
So we're end of May, just about to hit June in a day or two. Any velvet? What is he?
Everything's in the velvet.
I was going to say, it should be, right?
And you should be able
to see. The elk still are.
You know, like anything that's going to be up there in that, you know, 130 and above, 120, 130 score up to the 140s and then the big boys, of course. You should be able to see 4 points now on a 4 point.
Okay.
You should be able to see all of that. You know, some of these little legal bucks that we see, you know, kids getting first time bucks, first year bucks, you know, where they have a 1 inch point out on the edge. We might not see that right now.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be covered up with the velvet and things, but anything that has a good frame, you should be able to see right now how many points it's going to have. The other thing is the does are dropping fawns. I'm sure of it.
They are right now.
We usually see them start dropping the end of May, and then we'll see that all the way up until July. The late ones will drop in July. So we won't see the fawns.
So any predator stuff popping up?
Well, the predators that I worry about the most right now, the coyotes, if they can find them.
Okay.
But a mother doe, she'll pretty much take a lone coyote. And she'll make his life miserable if he's trying to get in there. But I'm sure they steal a few. The bears is the one that bothers me.
Okay.
And we got bears that come off the Indian reservation, come across, or from our side, go to their side, whatever.
Yeah, bears can swim if nobody realizes it.
Yeah, actually, they swim really, really well. Yeah.
Well and fast.
And fast. Yeah, I don't think a bear can sink. I think they have enough whatever oily
fat. It's like
fat.
Its own raft.
It is. They just... jump in the water and they float. And, wow. And then they got big old paws.
Until you see it with your own eyes, same with how fast they'll climb. Until I've seen it, you would think you could outclimb it no problem. Yeah. And it's like, you just did a chance.
But a bear's not gonna take and a doe's not going to do too much because the bear will just take her down and just have extra lunch.
Okay.
So
any predator opportunities for folks that want an adventure or anything?
Nothing we can do at that point. Okay. Yeah, other than, you know, the bears don't like us.
Yeah.
They don't like being around when we're around. And I don't see too many bears just hanging out when I bump into them in the summer. But I don't know. Those are the only ones that really bother me.
Okay.
But we don't have a big enough bear problem to.
Gotcha.
Okay. Now, the wolves, you know, the adolescent wolves that move through, I hear rumors all about them and everything else. But
Have you heard any up by the cabins?
I've never heard any at my place or anything. Like I said, on some of my lease ground over on the river, because that's where the adolescents run is up and down the river and the lakes. They stay close to the water. And so we don't see them on top very much. Saying all that to say this, the deer population is just really low still. We still haven't got the cover back that we need to have to have a full, you know, we could have a lot more deer than what we have. We just don't have the cover habitat. We got the food, and this year has been good enough.
Prospects for your guys that are on the books they'll have some really nice things to choose from.
We'll have some deer to choose from, and so we'll be out there and about, and so that's all looking pretty good. Trail cameras. I'm trying to get some trail cameras put up moving some trail cameras, actually, and some other ones. I'll put some new ones up where I've started to see, like,
are
this
you
buck.
Doing all cellular at this point?
No. Okay. No. I haven't
I was going to say, splurged. I mean, I have four of them, I think.
I got you four. Can, I think I got four, exactly.
Yeah, I don't have cellular ones, but I've got nice Moultrie ones. If you need extra, let me know.
Yeah, but those are the ones I'm moving, though, because I've now seen a buck, and I want to watch him. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to go pull a chip.
Yeah, that's part of the fun.
I'm
going to
move one of the cellular ones over there move another one around. So, that's my calendar for the next couple weeks. It's just going to be
any openings up at the cabin for, like, June?
I've got a few. I've got 2 weekends left in June that people could come and
so it'll
and
get do. Busy after that. So if they want to come see.
But see, they can come in the week if the kids are out of school and they're taking vacation. July and August are booked. Okay. So those are already full. So, but yeah, come on out and let me know. And if you just want to come out and take a look around and go take some pictures, I'd be more than happy to take somebody out for the adventures.
How many pictures of that barn do you think are floating around? He has a barn out there that can't stop and not take a picture. Must have 80 pictures of that barn.
Oh,
in a different light, it looks different.
Well, and then the salmon
everybody
fisherman.
That visits you.
Oh, yeah. The salmon fisherman. They actually drew a picture and put it up in the cabin.
Yep, that's right.
Of the barn. It's a pencil sketch. Mm-hmm. Beautiful picture.
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. There is a whole artwork, body of art on barn.
Mm-hmm.
In Teton Park, there's a big barn that is world famous. And I found one over here at a friend's house, and I told him where it was. He said, I thought that was in Washington. I said, no, that's definitely not Washington.
Yeah, outside of Jackson Hole, there's an entire barn movement of old, like 1880s and whatnot. But you're really the way cool. your barn is situated, different times of the day, different light hits it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It'd be a photographer's dream, just the way the... You can play the light, and I don't think there's a bad angle on it. So.
Well, you and me got to go find that antelope that walked out one day.
We do.
And Dave goes, man, I'd really like to see an antelope. Well, look, Dave, there's one right there. Walks right by the target.
Yep, as ordered.
As ordered. Couldn't have happened any better.
That's a good outfitter right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, on demand.
I can deliver really quickly. Yeah.
Hang on a second. Well, Rusty, thanks again for having me over and having me help on the podcast. And Dave, thanks for making the time.
Great
and
having you again.
Giving
man.
Us a place. Super appreciate it. And,
You're welcome here anytime.
All right. Well, we'll have to get some fishing and some other stuff in. We got to shoot that muzzleloader, too.
Yes, we do. Yeah, Dad was looking at it the other day, and I'm going, oh, I got to get it
probably
going
playing
before
with it
he
right
starts
now.
Playing with it. Exactly. Rusty's doing a podcast. I'll go take a crack at that.
All right. Well, I was thinking of this on the way over. How do we say it? Is it Ephrata or Euphrata? Because I think I grew up just calling it different.
Well, we all say Ephrata around.
Ephrata, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But if you go to Pennsylvania, which that town's what? Three times bigger, four times bigger. Yeah. They're just over 30,000, I think. They call it Ephrata.
Ephrata.
And here in Washington, it is Ephrata.
Ephrata. All right.
Ephrata.
Well, from Ephrata. Thanks for joining us on the HRO Adventures podcast with Rusty and Dave and the other Dave as well.
Yeah.
And stay tuned for the next episode. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Dave.